Take it.
Burke turned left. Reacher craned his neck again and saw the apartments above his new favorite cafe.
Get in the right-hand lane now.
Burke dabbed the brake hard, and Reacher jolted forward and hit the front seat. He heard the turn signal click, then the car jumped right and slowed.
You'll see your target on the right, the green Jaguar from the first morning, exactly halfway up the block on the right.
Already see it. Reacher thought, the same place? It's right there, on the same damn fire plug?
Stop and make the transfer.
Reacher felt the transmission slam into park, and he heard the click of the hazard lights start up. Then Burke's door opened and noise blew in. The suspension rocked as Burke climbed out. There was honking on the street behind, an instant traffic jam. 10 seconds later, the door next to Reacher's head opened wide. Burke didn't look down, just leaned in and grabbed the bag. Reacher craned his neck the other way and looked at the Jaguar upside down. Saw a flash of dark green paint, then the door shut in his face. He heard the Jaguar's door open, then he heard it shut again. He heard a faint hydraulic thunk from somewhere outside. 10 seconds after that, Burke was back in his seat. He was a little out of breath.
The transfer is done. The money is in the Jaguar.
Goodbye.
The phone clicked off, the car filled with silence, profound and absolute.
Go now, Reacher said.
Turn right on Bleecker. Burke took off with the hazard warning still clicking. He caught the light and barged through the crosswalk, accelerated for 20 yards, and then jammed on the brakes hard. Reacher fumbled horizontally above his head and found the door handle, pulled it and butted the door open and scrambled out. He stood up and slammed the door and paused for a second and tugged his shirt down. Then he hustled back to the corner. Chapter 16. Reacher stopped while he was still on Bleecker and jammed his hands in his pockets and then restarted at a more appropriate pace. He turned left onto 6th like a man walking home, maybe after a busy day at work, maybe planning a stop in a bar, maybe with grocery shopping on his mind, just blending in, which he was surprisingly good at, given that he was always a head taller than anyone else around him. The height advantage was a mixed blessing for surveillance. It made him theoretically conspicuous, but it meant he could see farther than the average guy. Simple trigonometry. He stayed in the middle of the sidewalk and looked straight ahead and put the green Jaguar firmly in his peripheral vision. Checked left, nothing. Checked right, over the Jaguar's roof, and saw a guy 6 feet from the driver's door. It was the same guy he had seen the very first night. He was absolutely sure of that. Same stature, same posture, same movements, same clothes. White, a little sunburned, lean, chiseled, clean-shaven, jaw clamped, not smiling, maybe 40 years old. Calm, focused, intent, neat and quick, dodging traffic just into his final 2 strides before reaching the car. Fluid, economical movements. The guy pulled the door and slid into the seat and started the engine and clipped his belt and took a long glance back over his shoulder at the traffic. Then he pulled out neatly into a gap and took off north. Reacher kept on walking south but turned his head to watch him go. The guy flashed past, out of sight. 6 seconds beginning to end, maybe less. And for what? Just a white guy, average height, average weight, dressed like every other off-duty white guy in the city. Jeans, shirt, sneakers, ball cap, maybe 40. Unremarkable in every way. Description? Nothing to say except just a guy. Reacher glanced south at the river of traffic. There were no free cabs coming, none at all. So he turned again and jogged back to the corner of Bleecker to see if Burke had waited for him. But Burke hadn't. So Reacher set out walking. He was too frustrated to take the subway. He needed to walk it off. He charged north on 6th, fast and furious, and people moved out of his way like he was radioactive. 20 minutes and 20 blocks later, he saw a Staples store on the opposite sidewalk. Red and white signs, windows full of office-supply bargains. He dodged cars and crossed over to check it out. It was a big place. He didn't know which branch Carter Groom had taken Kate Lane to, but he figured chains carried the same stuff everywhere. He went inside and passed a corral made from inch-thick chrome bars where shopping carts were racked together. Beyond that on the left were the checkout registers. Beyond the carts on the right was a print shop full of industrial-strength photocopiers. In front of him were about 20 narrow aisles with shelves that reached the ceiling. They were piled high with an intimidating array of stuff. He started at the left front corner and zigzagged all the way through the store to the rear of the last aisle on the right. The biggest thing he saw was a desk. The smallest, either a thumbtack or a paperclip, depending on whether he judged by size or weight. He saw paper, computers, printers, toner cartridges, pens, pencils, envelopes, file boxes, plastic crates, parcel tape. He saw things he had never seen before. Software for designing houses and filing taxes, label printers, cell phones that took video pictures and sent email. He walked back to the front of the store with absolutely no idea at all of what Kate Lane might have been looking for. He stood in a daze and watched a photocopier at work. It was a machine as big as a laundrette dryer, and it was spitting copies out so hard and so fast that it was rocking back and forth on its feet and costing some customer a fortune. That was clear. A sign overhead said that photocopying cost between 4 cents and $2 a sheet, depending on the quality of the paper and the choice between black and white and color. A lot of money, potentially. Opposite the print shop corral was a display of inkjet cartridges. They were expensive, too. Reacher had no idea what they were for, or what they did, or why they cost so much. He pushed past a line of people at a checkout desk and headed for the street. Another 20 minutes and 20 blocks later, he was at Bryant Park, eating a hot dog from a street vendor. 20 minutes and 20 blocks after that, he was in Central Park, drinking a bottle of still water from another street vendor. 12 more blocks north, he was still in Central Park, directly opposite the Dakota Building, under a tree, stopped dead, face to face with Anne Lane, Edward Lane's first wife. Chapter 17. The first thing Anne Lane did was tell Reacher he was wrong.
"You saw Lane's photograph of her," she said.
He nodded.
"We were very alike."
He nodded again.
"Anne was my sister."
"I'm sorry. I'm sorry for staring, and I'm sorry for your loss."
"Thank you," the woman said.
"Were you twins?"
"I'm 6 years younger, which means right now I'm the same age as Anne was in that photograph. Like a virtual twin, maybe."
"You look exactly like her."
"I try to."
"It's uncanny."
"I try very hard."
"Why?"
"Because it feels like I'm keeping her alive. Because I couldn't, back when it mattered."
"How could you have kept her alive?"
"We should talk. My name is Patty Joseph."
"Jack Reacher."
"Come with me. We have to double back. We can't go too near the Dakota."
She led him south through the park to the exit at 66th Street, across to the far sidewalk, then north again and into the lobby of a building at 115 Central Park West.
"Welcome to the Majestic," Patty Joseph said. "Best place I ever lived. And just wait until you see where my apartment is."
Reacher saw where it was 5 minutes later after a walk down a corridor and an elevator ride and another walk down another corridor. Patty Joseph's apartment was on the Majestic's 7th floor, north side. Its living room window looked out over 72nd Street, directly at the Dakota's entrance.